I have to get up. There's a limit to the damage I can take, even with the scar. The knight turned peacock iridescent with flame. A bolt hit it low on the side. Hellfire crackling and fluorescing into blue, scarring my eyes. The thing went flying. Holy shit! That was Hellfire in the blue spectrum! Who is it, a Hellbreed come to dispatch me personally? I choked on blood and tried to make my body obey me, struggling to turn over onto my side and push myself up. The frozen pavement burned my skin.
Keep still, Kiss.
Oh, that voice. Too familiar.
Let your body mend. This will only take a moment.
What the fuck is he doing here?
I pushed myself up on my feet, ribs snapping out and crackling as they melded back together, but too slow. Far too slow.
Be still, Kismet.
I lifted my head. Perry, in a loose, elegant gray suit, stood with his hands in his pants pockets, the street lamp shining on his blonde hair like a halo tilted just so. He cocked his head as if listening, looking at the creature, which hunched in the middle of a shattered car. Hellflame dripped from its smoking hide, melting glass and metal, and igniting the gas tank. I threw up my unwounded left arm to shield myself from the glass and shrapnel. Grating pain tore all the way down my ribs. The creature retreated as quickly as it appeared. The sound was distinctive, and by habit I noted it. If I hadn't had the cuff off, I wouldn't have been able to track it as the sound faded south into the night.
No!
Pain ran up my right arm from the scar, throbbing and delicious, sinking into torn muscle and broken bone. Harry's fingers sank into my left arm, a bolt of agonized heat going through me.
Oh!
Idiot! Little idiot! Look at this mess!
Harry's fingers tightened.
Oh!
He propped me against the shattered glass and twisted iron of the window.
I made quite a dent. Must have been going at a fair clip when I hit.
My right arm hung in strips of meat. The humerus snapped.
Look at this! You idiot! You fool! You stupid little idiotic feather-brained ninny!
The scar pulsed hotly, pleasure rising with the pain. A horrible writhing python smashing through my nervous system. His other hand closed around my blood-slicked wrist. I tried to fend him off. He slammed me back against the jagged metal. Then he ground the edges of my broken arm together with exquisite care, at just the angle to produce maximum agony.
Damage my fine work, will you? How is this, Kiss? Do you like the pain? Do you?
I collapsed, hanging onto consciousness by a thread. My lips were hot and slick with blood.
Fuck you.
Promises, promises.
Harry's breath touched the scar, and the jolt of maggot pleasure that slid through me dipped me into fiery slime. It even drowned the pain for a moment.
Someday, Kismet, some fine day when I'm getting a little bored, we'll play a few games.
His lips met the scar, and mercifully it was pain again. Great roaring waves of pain as hellfire tore through my body, each wound rubbed with acid and ash. Sadistic waves of agony as he took his time melding my shattered body back together. The scale, hot, slick, wet touch of his tongue against the puckered tissue coated the roaring agony with slime, burrowed into my hindbrain and ripped at the roots of my sanity. I hit the pavement hard, weak as a newborn, but whole. Blood soaked into what clothes I had left. My coat was a mess. Perry turned on his heel, surveying the street. Smoke billowed up from the burning car, and condensation rose into the air as merely chill met freezing and mixed.
This is highly unpleasant.
What do you think, I'm having a ball?
Highly unpleasant. I might almost suspect. You make this so fucking difficult, Kiss. I've broken stronger traitors with ease.
I'm not traitor. I'm a hunter. And someday, it's going to be you.
Pray it never reaches that point, Kiss. You won't like being hunted.
I'm going to be the one hunting you, you bastard. Strength returned, the mark sending a wave of fiery pleasure up my arm. Flush again, full, ripe. I could feel the warming trickle between my legs.
Ugh.
My hips jerked forward.
What was that thing?
How should I know? You're lucky it didn't kill you. Is this about your last visit to the Monde?
Kind of. Blessed air filled my lungs.
I'm going to live. Thank you, God, I am going to live.
I pushed myself up to sitting position. Broken glass grinding against shredded leather. Levered myself up, balancing on unsteady feet.
What are you doing here, Perry?
Watching out for my investment, Kiss. I've put a lot of effort into you, and you're coming along quite nicely.
Leave the mindfucks at home, Pericles.
No mindfuck, Kiss. Strictly fact. Now, are you waiting around for the cops? I have other business to conduct tonight. You know, places to go, people to kill.
Go bother someone else.
Perry showed no sign of leaving.
Where's your pussycat? Have you finally sworn off bestiality?
Lord, I wish Saul was here right now and there was a bullet or two in your head. That would make me very happy.
Lay off, Perry. I'm warning you.
I only ask out of curiosity. See how patient I'm being? A good little hellspawn.
That was a trap for me.
Gee, you think?
What are you really doing here?
I told you, looking after my investment. You think you can go for a few hours without getting shot or torn up? I really do have important things to do.
Thanks, Perry. Now get the fuck away from me.
Ooh, sweet talk will get you nowhere. I'll see you tomorrow night.
Midnight. I haven't forgotten. I turned toward the first cop cars as they arrived on the scene, bracing myself. When my eyes flicked back to where he had been standing, Perry was gone.
I hate it when he does that.
I swallowed, tasting blood and bile, and peeled myself away from the twisted iron bars.
Monty is just going to die. And I could have died. Oh, God. My God, I could have died.
Wu Song's is a little hole in the wall, a neon dragon over a single door. No windows, and the smell of foreign cooking belching out each time someone entered or left. Since I was battered, bloody, and generally not in a good mood, I stood outside across the street waiting for Saul to appear, shepherding our nervous witness. Monty hadn't been happy about the scene that occurred, but at least the Phoebe on duty, sleek, dark Juan Ruijio, was actually a decent sort who wouldn't make any problems. Both of them were a little pale when I presented them with the scenario that scares everyone the most. Something out there a hunter doesn't know about, and hasn't had any luck stopping. Ruijio had promised to get me a list of all the professional operators in town, even if he had to do a little interagency arm twisting. That's one thing about being a hunter. You're usually assured of getting cooperation from even the stingiest intelligence agencies. Turf wars end up with a lot of dead civilians and uncomfortable media attention, and that's two things no intelligence or law enforcement agency wants. Especially the latter. There are very few spooks, phoebes, ghosts, or rubber pencils who want to interfere. The FBI has its own hunter division, the Martindale Squad. And it's whispered that the CIA has a few operatives that are a little more than strictly human. I wouldn't know about that, though. Though, strictly speaking, a list of mercs in town wouldn't do much good. This had been a one-time shot. Now I was wary, and whatever mercenaries they'd set on me had suffered horrific casualties. It would be inefficient to send another mercenary cadre after me and expect it to delay me or hold me for the creature, whatever it was. And whoever was pulling the strings here wasn't stupid or inefficient. Rui had once again accused me of being a menace to property, but he'd done it with a twinkle in his eye. Monty was chewing Tums by the bucket load. He was the one who had to deal with the media showing up in droves and demanding an explanation. And I was ready to explode from frustration. Robbie's eyes widened as he took me in. Saul himself barely raised an eyebrow. His gaze did flick to the leather cuff on my right wrist, which was conspicuously not blood-soaked. His hand was over Robbie's shoulder, and he moved with an awareness and grace that, as usual, comforted me and unsettled me a little at the same time. Sometimes I wondered what would have happened if I'd still been just a human hunter when I met Saul. The scar was Perry's claim on me, true. But it also meant I wasn't so easily damaged during bedplay. And there were several times I could have died if not for the fact that I was tougher and quicker now, which would have put a distinct crimp in our relationship. Go figure. I meet the perfect man after I'm in hock to a hellbreed, and if I wasn't tainted, I couldn't have had a relationship with a were. I kept to the shadows, beckoning them into the alley across from Wu Song's. I suspected Robbie the Juicer would be a lot more comfortable in a dark place, where he didn't have to focus on the bloody rags I wore. Half my left breast was peering out. My shirt was never going to be the same. And the tough leather of my pants was shredded. My long leather coat wasn't ever going to be the same either.
Whew. You stink, babe.
Thanks. I just had a run-in with something big and hairy that looks like a were on steroids and reeks to high heaven.
God. What did I get myself into?
Relax, Robbie. I'm not going to hurt you. As a matter of fact, I'm your new best friend. I'm going to keep you alive.
Very goddamn kind of you. What the fuck happened?
Who did you tell about the other night?
Couple people. Shit, man. After that, I was happy to be alive. You got a cigarette?
I suggest we take him somewhere safe. I don't like this.
I hear you. Mickey's? The bar, not the front? Saul nodded. The little bottle of holy water at his neck sparkled summer blue once, maybe reacting to the scar still pulsing hard and heavy under the cuff. Or maybe it was because I smelled of hellbreed. Perry's etheric fingerprints all over me from the work he'd done patching me up.
I'll drive.
Robbie stared into his coffee cup while I scrubbed at my hands with baby wipes. I'd changed in the bathroom, into fresh pants and a t-shirt I kept in the Impala's trunk. But my coat was still tacky wet with blood, and my boots were squishy. It had dried under my short bitten nails and crusted in my hair. Thank God it's only my blood. No civilian casualties. I managed to keep anyone innocent from being hurt. It wasn't as comforting as it should have been, but it was enough for me. The bartender, Theron, brought me a stack of damp washcloths and a beer. Thayer was tall, lean, dark, and intense. He also happened to be a werepanther. I'd only seen him shift once, during a fight with a nest of middle-way chaos-worshipping wannabes. I didn't want to see it again. Panther jaws can crack bones, and Theron was big. Weres tend to run bulkier than both humans and beasts, but some of them just look too huge to be real. He was good backup, but extremely unpredictable. Not someone to call unless you wanted to play it his way. Still, he was a good sort, and part of the reason why nobody stepped out of line in Mickey's. He gave a nod to Saul, then turned to me.
You stink.
I know, Theron. Thanks.
Want a shot, Saul?
No, thanks.
Saul was extraordinarily still. His shoulders spread wide, and his eyes luminous. Theron gave him a toothy smile and retreated. In the dominance game between wares, Saul and Thayer were roughly equal. Sometimes Thayer pushed it a little, moving in on me, getting a little too close. It was a wares version of social game playing, and I didn't like being a chit in the middle. Another night I might have been amused. Robbie's dark eyes were wide, his spotted cheeks pasty. He was sweating, and he smelled like too few showers and too much drinking, with a healthy dash of fear sweat on top. His fingernails were brutally short, but still grimy.
Why don't you start at the beginning, Robbie?
I got to the field at about 10:30. I wasn't drunk, but I was tired. So I wanted a place where I could think, right? I pissed, and I got my sleeping bag all set up, got my stuff situated. Then I settled down, and I was almost asleep, man. Thought of lighting a J to get myself all nice and mellow, but I was finally warming up. It was a cold fucking day, I tell you, out on the streets. So, I don't know what time it was, but I heard an engine. And not a cop car or anything, just a very soft, nice, purring engine. I got this weird feeling. Just a weird feeling. You live on the street long enough, you start to get a kind of feel for the nutsoid things. Like when the crazy shit is gonna start going down. And sometimes you don't get no warning, but most of the time there's this feeling before crazy shit starts up. You understand?
Like instinct?
Yeah, instinct. That's the word. I just got that feeling. So I got up, and I went to the end of the dugout. And real low-like. Creeping. And looked out. I saw this black van sitting there, just sitting. And then I noticed it ain't got no license plate. And I think maybe the cops are doing a sting. And I'm getting ready to get my ass out of there nice and quiet like. Then the door opens. And out jumps this thing. And damned if it don't look like a goddamn ape. But it hunches down like them things you see in movies. You seen that movie? There's these things. They look human, but they don't move in no human way.
Honey, I don't need movies. I see them in living color.
I guess so.
Like this movie where guys change into werewolves. And they run on their hands and feet, but their shoulders are all funny. And they've got weird shaped heads and lots of teeth. Anyway, the goddamn thing hopped out and started snuffling. And I started thinking maybe it could smell me. Because I could smell it. Smelled like a wet dog puking its guts out in a whorehouse.
Vivid. Go on.
Someone's gotten out and they're moving around. A woman. Light hair, but not blonde. I can see her haircut. She's got it cut like that. The bitch on Channel 12.
Susan Zamora? The anchor woman? Zamora had a sleek leonine bob dyed a fashionable chocolate cherry color. She was a barracuda in human form. There's no love lost between me and the press. I like to keep things quiet, because let's face it, normal people don't want to know about the night side. Reporters have just enough orneriness to think they want to know, that's all. Which equals a huge pain in the ass for a hunter and the cops. Don't get me wrong. I love the Fourth Estate like any red-blooded American. But Jesus wept they make my job harder. Fortunately, they get stonewalled by everyone except UFO nutjobs and fake psychics. Anyone who knows about the night side knows not to talk about it.
Yeah, that her, that way. She's moving around. There's nobody else out there. And I've got a bad, bad feeling about this, because a furry-smelling thing is snuffling, and I got this feeling like I'm going to throw up. Anyway, the woman barks something, and the furry thing leaps up into the back of the van, and I can see the entire thing rock a little bit. Then it brings out something real pale. And I can see it's not right. The only thing that big is a body, but it handles it like it's nothing. The furry thing kinda shuffles to the edge of the sidewalk, and it throws the thing. And I see it's a body, but something's wrong with it. It hits with a kinda a thud. And the furry thing is back in the van, and the woman gets in. Then the engine gets to purring again, and they're gone. I bet it smelled me. Yeah, it had to have.
Don't worry about that right now. Was there anything else? Did she talk, laugh, move around in the van at all?
Moved around looking up, that's all. What the fuck was that thing? It wasn't human. I wasn't drunk, ma'am. It wasn't human at all.
I'll take him to Galena's and leave him there. That's the safest place for him right now. And she won't stand for any street bullshit. What's important for right now is to keep you out of sight. I've got someone you can stay with, if you don't mind a bit of work. It's either that, or hit the streets where these people, whoever they are looking for you. Think back and tell me everyone you told about this. Everyone.
Well, I told Jake, who hangs in Central, and Deke, this guy I party with sometimes down on Elm. I might have told Lenny and Billy. A couple of dudes from down by the bus station.
Anyone else?
Oh, yeah. And that kid who hangs around Plaskenny Square with the blue hair and the rings in his nose. Tall kid. I mentioned it to him. That's all.
That's all? Oh, man, this just keeps getting better and better.
Tell Jill what you told me, Robbie, about what the woman said.
Oh, yeah, almost forgot. It sounded like French.
French. Okay.
I took 4 years of French in high school. I think that's what she was speaking. Something about, oh, shit, I'm rusty at it. But I'd swear it was French.
Wonderful. A French-speaking broad with fancy hair, multiple murders, and more on the way. And something so tough, even Perry's frightened of it. Not to mention the fact that I think Perry knows more than he's telling. Oh, this just keeps getting better. But for right now, all I want to do is go home and sleep. I kissed along the edge of Saul's jaw. Found his mouth again. Saul tasted of night, of cold wind and wildness and the scotch I'd taken down 4 mouthfuls of before he'd slid his arm around my waist and half-dragged me to bed. The third orgasm is always the nicest. It had taken months of patient trying before I could let him touch me anywhere covered by a bikini, and even longer before I could rest there under his weight, utterly vulnerable. We were branching out, experimenting, and I finally felt like I'd trampled some of the demons of my adolescence. But coming so close to death raised demons of its own. I closed my eyes, let him nibble at my throat. It was a highly erogenous zone for wares, especially wares of the cat persuasion, a sign of trust and a sign of territorial marking. A hickey on the neck of a wares mate means seriousness, means don't touch this, it's mine. Saul was ware. He wasn't a human man. And sometimes, I wondered if that was why I could let him touch me. With Mikhail, it had been different. He had been my teacher, trusted absolutely, even in the confines of the bed, always in control, until Mikhail had no longer wanted me. My hands relaxed, slid down Saul's arms. The leather of the cuff touched his shoulder. He nuzzled deeper in my throat, the sharp edges of his teeth brushing the skin just over my pulse. A strand of his hair, freighted with a silver charm, lay across my chin. Oh, Saul. He sucked at my throat, a spot of almost pain, gauging it perfectly. I could feel the blood rising to the surface, blossoming on the skin. The bruise would be flawless, a dark mark, almost like a brand. One last gentle kiss against my carotid artery, and he moved off of me. The usual slow movement ended up with my head on his shoulder and his arm around me, my body slumped against his side. He was warm, flush with heat.
Better?
Much. Good therapy.
Happy to provide. You looked pretty bloody.
It beat the shit out of me. I didn't hit it.
It was a trap?
Yep. Perry showed up. Hellfire didn't even damage the thing, but he blew up a car and it ran off. Then he patched me up.
Patched you up?
Says I'm an investment. Oh, please, Saul. Please.
I don't like it.
You think I do? You think I like it?
Why keep going back?
He's fucking useful. And if it hadn't been for the goddamn bargain, I would have died.
I can take care of you. If it wasn't for the goddamn bargain, I wouldn't have left you there.
And they might have killed us both and our witness as well. I'm a hunter, Saul. Perry's a tool. That's all. One day I'll kill him.
Not soon enough.
Not soon enough for me either. I love you, damn it.
I know, kitten. I love you.
It's just a tool for...
I know! I know. I'm gonna breathe a sigh of relief when I see that hillspawn motherfucker draw his last breath. I wish I could tear out his throat myself.
Stay with me, Saul. Because if you leave me, I don't know what I'll do.
I'm not going anywhere, kitten.
The next day brought bad news, another body, and the first break. My pager was destroyed from last night's fun, and it would take me a day or so to get a new one. But they called me at home, and I made the scene in less than half an hour.
We don't know her name yet.
Christ, Carp. The abandoned parking lot was deserted under thin winter afternoon sunshine, weeds forcing up through cracked old concrete. The body, if there was enough left of it to qualify as a body, lay slumped in the middle, blood lying sticky wet on sharp thistle leaves and dead dandelion plants. The ribs were twisted aside, viscera and other organs gone. The eyes had been plucked from the skull, and long strands of blood-matted hair stirred gently under the wind-stroking fingers. Off in the ambulance, the kid who had found the body as he cut through the parking lot on his way to school sat emotionless, shaken to the core by the sight he'd encountered. His mother was on her way to pick him up. No more shortcuts for him. The winter sunlight caressed my shoulders. The wind had veered and was coming from the far-off mountains. We would have deep frost. Living in semi-desert meant that winters were miserable, cold times, especially with the war between the river wind and the mountains breathing on us. I'd managed to get the blood off my coat, but it hung in tatters, clearly showing where the thing had clawed me. The right sleeve had needed patching before I could even put it on, and I wore my second-best pair of boots. Oh, God. All I have is more questions.
Black van with no license plate. A redhead who speaks French, and something that smells like... what was it?
A wet dog puking its guts out in a whorehouse.
Shit.
Saul picked his way around the body, watching where he stepped. He stopped, lowered himself slowly, staring intently at the ground. Then he reached down, his fingers delicate, and picked something up. I held my breath. He continued on his circuit, examining the cracked concrete and frost-dead weeds. Rosie strode up, her eyes hidden behind mirrored sunglasses. Today, she wore a hooded Santa Luz Wheelwright sweatshirt jacket and a black leather coat, jeans, and black Nikes. She looked like a fresh-scrubbed college kid, especially with the shades.
How you feeling, Jill? Heard you caused some damage last night.
Wasn't my fault.
You were right.
So you heard I was covered in blood, Rosie. I didn't know you cared. The thought was snide, unworthy of me. She did care. A cop who didn't care wouldn't have limped down to the warehouse in her bandages and apologized to me. I got beat up a bit, but I'm okay.
Jill, the press is crawling on our backs. All sorts of wackos coming out of the woodwork.
Any incredibly weird or just the usual weird?
Just the usual. Crystal-crawling psychics, copycats, nutcases. This whole thing is starting to piss me off.
Me too. I'm working as hard as I can.
We know. We know, Jill.
Saul approached, He held up his hand and something dangled. Three thin leather thongs, braided, interwoven with feathers and bits of fur. There were complex knots and a pattern that looked vaguely familiar. A single dart of darkness was braided into the end of it.
Found something.
An obsidian arrowhead, carefully flaked, and probably genuine.
Oh, smells awful. Probably related.
I plunged a hand in my pocket, already hunting for a drawstring bag. Found one, fished it out. Finally. Come to Mama. Saul dropped the arrowhead into the bag. The thing was oddly heavy and coldly malignant.
And he's right. It does smell.
I caught a faint whiff of a familiar reek.
I don't like this. That thing is evil, Jill.
They usually are.
Do you recognize it, Saul? Saul shook his head, his jaw setting grimly. I stuffed the bag in another pocket and studied the body. Now that Saul had circled it, I approached cautiously. He had point-blank refused to let me get near it until he had a chance to look. He stayed back as I edged closer, but I felt his eyes on me. Now that I'd seen the creature, I could see marks that matched its claws. There were ragged slices in the flesh, chunks taken out of the thighs and the breasts gone, just divots with glaring white splinters of rib poking through sodden meat. I peered into the cavity left by the taking of the viscera, and my eyes narrowed.
Wait a second. Wait just a goddamn second.
I looked through the rest of the scene, too. Found exactly zilch. But my heart was beating quickly as I nodded at the forensic team and went back to Saul. There's something else.
What have you got?
There's claw marks and other marks. The thing I saw last night had claws shaped like this one on the outside. The other marks, inside the abdominal cavity and around her eyes, those are too clean. And they're almost covered by the claw marks. The ones covered up are made by something sharp, like a scalpel.
Scalpel? Well, okay. So?
I assumed the creature was eating what it took. It may be. But it might also be getting a little help. Or eating leftovers.
Or it's covering something up.
Either way. Cheer up, boys and girls. This constitutes our first bit of good luck.
Yeah? How so?
Well, it's more than we had before. And if that little thing Saul found is from it, we can track it. Tracking it's the first step to finding it, which is the first step to taking its sorry ass apart. And that will make me very, very happy. Saul stirred next to me, and I didn't have to read his mind. He was thinking that I'd run up against this thing once before and nearly died. So why should tracking it make me happy? But I did. I felt irrationally happy. If it would make a mistake, like dropping something, it could make other mistakes.
Unless this is a challenge. Fuck you, Kismet. We nearly got you last night. We'll get you eventually.
Do we know the time of death?
Hard to tell with the body so torn up. But it ain't frozen. And if it ain't frozen, with this kind of cold on the pavement, it's still pretty fresh.
The blood's still a little tacky wet, too. I cast around.
Good luck getting tire tracks on this concrete. But how did they get the van here? If they did get the van here.
I sorted through all of the questions in my head. Still far too many for my taste. I picked the most useful one. The question is, why get rid of the bodies like this? What purpose does it serve?
Makes our lives miserable.
Not as miserable as our victims here.
I'm going to do some research. Buzz me if anyone else dies.
Yeah, we'll call you. And why didn't you get a goddamn cell phone?
Can't afford to replace them. As many times as I get beat up and dumped in water, not to mention electrocuted, stabbed, shot.
Okay, I got it. Get this one corralled quick, Kiss. Rosie's getting pissy with the long hours.
Fuck you, Carp. I'm glad you're okay, Kiss.
Me too, Rosie. Thanks. Saul followed me to the Impala, sitting tucked out of sight around the corner on Edgerton. He was sticking so close, he might have been glued to me. I looked at the red fuzzy dice. They swung gently when I reached up and touched them, a gift from Galena.
I should go see her and have a cup of tea.
It always helps me think clearer. But we have a witness stashed at her house. It wouldn't do to go visiting her again and maybe bring trouble to her door. Saul stared out through the windshield pensively. His profile was beautiful. I looked at his mouth. He had such a lovely mouth. His upper lip chiseled and his lower slightly full. A little bruised from kissing. One of these days, I'm going to leave a hickey on him. He'll like that. This is a break. A good one.
I don't like it. Broadway's only 4 blocks away.
Meaning they're playing with me. They dumped the body less than 4 blocks away from where they tried to kill me. Or did it come straight from dumping the body to mangle me? Either way, it's not good. I know, but this is still a break.
You're visiting Perry tonight.
Thanks for reminding me.
I want you to stay there.
What the fuck, Saul?
I want to go do some research. I want you to stay at the Monde until I get back. It might take me a little while.
Why? Where are you going?
Just out to the barrio. I got a few things on my mind.
Like what?
Just a few things.
Oh, fuck that. I'll go with you.
No, kitten. There are some places down there you shouldn't go.
It didn't help that he was right. The barrio was a good place for someone of my racial persuasion to end up dead. The wares ran herd out there and only called me in if something boiled over. People are dying, Saul. I'll go anywhere I need to.
Please, kitten. If you're at the Monde, I know you're at least alive. I don't want to take you into the barrio.
His eyes dropped. He looked at the dash. You'd rather leave me with Perry.
He's got a vested interest in keeping you alive. You keep reminding me of that. And he chased that thing off last night.
I don't think he chased it off.
It left when he showed up. Good enough for me. Come on, Kiss. Please.
This is something I never thought I'd hear from you, Saul. Oh. Jesus Christ, Saul. What the hell's going on?
I wish I knew, kitten. I really do. I just want to ask some questions.
Like what questions?
Like some where questions.
Talk to me, Saul. Come on.
I just want to ask about that braid and knot pattern, that's all. It looks familiar, but I can't quite place it.
Is that arrowhead genuine?
You're a sharp girl. I think it is.
The hair?
Human.
Christ. Give me a vowel here, Saul.
Wish I had one to give. It just looks familiar, but I can't place it. Makes my hackles go up.
Instinct?
Always trusted.
I do. All right.
You'll stay there?
I will, Saul. If you want me to, I'll put up with Pericles. Just do what you have to do and don't leave me there long, for God's sake. I suppose you want my car.
I'll clean out the ashtray, and I won't grind the gears. We go into the hospital.
I want to check in on Father Rosas. Something about a Chaldean in a seminary after a Catholic artifact doesn't sit right with me. And an artifact I've never heard of, and that Hutch hasn't either? Then we're going to visit that doctor on Keen Koa.
Catholic rites do offer protection against Chaldean sorcery and possession. That bird thing couldn't get out of the chapel.
You've been studying, you naughty boy. Catholic immunity only started in the 16th century with the creation of the Jesuits and their Shadow Order. Loyola created the Society in 1534 and the Shadow Order in 1536 by secret charter. The Sorrows started to feel the pinch in 1588 when their house in Seville was cleared and torched. That was Juan de Alatriste. And then Alatriste went against the Scurf and Grenada and...
Breathe, Jill.
The only thing worse than going there is anticipating it.
He counts on that.
And you want me to stay there after he's finished with me. I could understand, I guess, why Saul wanted me somewhere he knew I'd be protected if that thing, whatever it was, came after me again. What I didn't understand was why he was with me at all. He was where? And human rules didn't apply. I mostly thought that was a good thing. Now I wondered. But I'd trusted him this far, with my body and whatever was left of my heart. I'd trusted him with everything Mikhail had left me. And I'd trusted him to watch my back more times than I could count. It would have to be good enough. Sisters of Mercy rises above downtown like a giant, brooding concrete bird. The old hospital is lost in a welter of pavement, but the great granite Jesus, tacked on the roof, still glowers in the direction of the financial district. We came in through the side entrance and suffered the immediate attack of linoleum, disinfectant, floor wax, and the smell of suffering. We took the stairs up to the second floor, post-cardiac. My fingers tightened, and Saul gave me a single inquiring look. I spotted Father Guillermo down the hall and felt my face harden. It still rankled. The church funded training for quite a few hunters. But it was an article of faith and doctrine that we were going to hell for our traffic with and contamination by the Nightside. Still, I'd thought I could trust Guy, that he wouldn't hold out on me. God knew I'd handled enough exorcisms for him. I deserved a little bit of warning if his seminary was holding a relic or artifact, even if it was very likely that the Sorrows had no interest in the fucking thing. But why were they there then? What the hell's going on with that? The scar tightened, sending a flush of heat up my arm. I stopped dead. Saul went still and dangerous beside me. He let go of my hand and reached for the hilt of his buoy. You smell that?
Incense. And blood. A blue smell.
Not just a blue smell, but a smell I remembered. A smell that made my hackles not just rise, but stiffen into steel spikes and pulse with bloodlust.
God, how I hate them. Hate them.
A sorrow's adept. The hallway was cluttered along the sides with little stations for doing paperwork. Bits of medical paraphernalia. Doctors and nurses striding around purposefully. And Father Guy, his stare blank as he leaned against the wall 3 feet away from a door that was slightly ajar.
Probably Father Rosas's room.
I went for my guns. I kept them low, glanced up at Saul. His cheeks were pale under his darker coloring.
Keep track of Guy. If he starts to act possessed, just back off and keep him in sight. Okay?
Okay. Gonna kill a sorrow, baby?
As many of them as I can in this lifetime.
I started down the hall. Father Guy stared straight ahead. He made no move, and I didn't sense anything demonic in him. His eyes were glazed, half closed. The smoky oddness of a hypno spell wove in the air around him.
Shit.
Finding out if the Sorrows had planted any triggers in him would be uncomfortable at best. I pushed the hospital door in with my foot, every nerve aware of Guy leaning against the wall. If he moved with the eerie speed of the possessed, this could get really ugly, really quick. I saw a slice of the hospital room, a pale blue curtain drawn around the bed, the door to a small bathroom standing ajar.
Take your pick, Jill. Do you think Asaro's going to be hiding in the can or behind the curtain?
The room was full of the blue, incense-laden smell of a Chaldean whore.
You can come in. I'm at the window. And I'm alone.
My entire body went cold, then flushed with the heat of rage. I knew that voice. Of all the adepts of any Sorrow's house, it was the last one I would think stupid enough to put herself in a room with me.
It's the bitch herself, Melisande Belisa.
The woman who had killed my teacher. She was in the window, but I peeked into the bathroom. Jolly fat Father Rosas, his cheeks ashen, slumbered the sleep of a tranquilized and tired old man. The red blossoms on his nose and upper cheeks were testament to his love for the bottle, and his graying black hair was lank and greasy, beginning to go bald on top. But he was whole and still alive, and he had a visitor. She had long black hair, blue-black, and a hint of tilted cat-like to her eyes. Her skin was a little darker than the Sorrows usually preferred, but well within canons. And her eyes were the limitless black of the adept who has practiced for more than 4 cycles of their calendar. black from lid to lid. No iris or white to break the sheer, gelid orbs. She wore delicate golden eardrops. And the bruising of Chaldean my blue eye could see in her aura was disciplined. A parasitical symbiote. A sickness that helped. Like an Arceus helped a traitor. The Elder Gods give to those who serve them well, almost as often as they consume them. She wore blue silk, in utter defiance of passing for normal. A Chinese-colored shirt, loose pants, slipper-like shoes, as if she was still in a house's quiet, incense-laden darkness, shafts of sunlight piercing the dim smoke. If it was the end of a cycle by their calendar, the air would be full of crackling expectation. And as night fell, there would be a black flashing knife and the gurgle as a drugged prisoner, or more likely, one of their own, a male raised in the house's gloom for just this purpose, would wind up throat slit. Sacrificial death fueling ceremonies from a time when the Elder Gods walked the earth. The Elder Gods were gone now, locked behind a wall so old even hunter legends only whisper of its making. But sometimes, the smaller Chaldean demons come through and wreak havoc. The sorrows accumulate what they can and spread their houses like a sickness, praying for the return of their hungry masters. I lifted both guns.
I need your help.
Oh, for Christ's sake. I've had all I can stand of people saying utterly incomprehensible things. This is for Mikhail.
I loved him, too. I just had to kill him.
I felt it again. Mikhail's body in my arms as he choked on blood, and her mocking, freezing laughter as she disappeared. As I screamed Mikhail's name until the wares, small consolation that they were watching him just as I was, came to bear him away from the shitty little hotel room where he'd breathed his last and give him a clean burning pyre. And not so incidentally, to restrain me as I tried to throw myself after the Sorrow's Adept. She would have killed me then. I was stronger now.
Shoot her now, goddammit! Shoot her!
I told you. No sorrows in my city.
You killed my brother. We thought he could stay here unnoticed in a seminary.
Was an Uthuruk and one of his classmates part of the plan?
Kill her. Kill her now.
But she had used that word. Brother. It wasn't like a sorrow. And he'd said sister.
They lie, though. It's SOP when dealing with sorrows. Don't believe a fucking word. Masters of the mind fuck. Sometimes they even make Perry look simple.
And this one had taken in my teacher, probably the smartest fucking hunter on the face of the earth. She had done it so easily.
The chaser was sent to bring him back. It took you to kill him, Hunter.
Like hell. How did it get in, Oscar? By mistake? He bit his poison tooth.
I don't blame him. We know how unkindly you view us.
The situation began to resolve behind my eyes. Maybe the Sorrows boy had been hiding out in the seminary. It was almost likely, and almost logical. The sunlight faded, a cloud drifting across the sky. She looked out the window, presenting me with a profile I had only seen before in shadows, through a haze of bloodlust, rage, fear, grief. And a slice of her throat, visible above the Chinese collar.
I am in violation, Hunter, and I've come here for your help. One of our adepts has escaped us and is engaging in forbidden acts.
I didn't think there were any acts forbidden to a Sorrow's House adept. Except, of course, being a decent fucking human being.
I eased back on the triggers a little, kept the guns pointed at her, saw Mikhail's face again, the light dimming in his eyes, the last gurgle as blood pumped free of the gaping razor-made wound in his throat. And oh, how he had loved her, meeting her in furtive alleys and motels, keeping his relationship with her a secret even from me, even though I'd been his apprentice. Closer to him than anyone else, Mikhail had kept his secrets. A hunter, snared in a sorrow's net, Belisa's plaything in a game still murky to me. After his death, the Wares and I had cleared the Sorrows house on Damietta Street. I had not left a single one of them alive. But Belisa had already stolen Mikhail's amulet, the Eye of Sekhmet. It was probably in a Sorrows treasure room right now, a pretty prize that had probably brought her the right to move up a few more ranks in the stifling cloister of priestesses. True to form, she didn't even offer an apology.
Both new blasphemy priests are alive, and so is your pet cat. Be grateful.
Let me take off my cuff and thank you, bitch.
You have 20 seconds before I blast you out that window and into hell. You might want to start talking.
Her name is Inez Germain. Blood-colored hair, very sleek. From the North House in Alsace-Lorraine.
Could Robbie have mistaken Chaldean for French? No way. They don't even sound similar.
I'm not convinced.
She is attempting an evocation, Hunter. She is fueling it with death and acquiring funding from the sale of bodily... Ah!
I lost my temper. Melisande was gone in a flurry of blue silk. I leapt to the window ledge, clearing the bed in one swift movement and almost plunged out, just in time to see her land on the pavement below, roll gracefully, and bolt down Sarcado Avenue. I crouched on the windowsill, both guns leveled. 5 stories is nothing to a sorrow.
Going after her now will just make everything messy. She has an escape route planned. This is the first step in the game. Just like she played with Mikhail.
Well, there's no getting away this time, bitch. Not on my watch.
I took careful aim with my right-hand gun, closing out everything around me. Sighted at her fleeing back. She stumbled, red blossoming as her right shoulder blade shattered.
Ooh, that's gonna hurt as it heals, isn't it?
No matter, I'll hunt her slowly. And before I'm done, bitch, you're gonna beg. Just like Mikhail did.
6 months I'd spent eating myself alive, wondering if I'd been too late to save my teacher because of jealousy, like any jilted lover. Until Saul and a hunt for a rogue ware had crossed into my city, and Perry's game to eat up whatever was left of my soul had shown me with stark clarity that I had not been to blame.
I didn't kill my teacher. She did.
Jill!
Saul grabbed my shoulders, dragged me back from the window.
Ah!
What the fuck?
It's her! It's her! The bitch! It's her!
Christ, was that really a sorrow?
Yeah.
It reeks in here, Jill.
It's okay. I'm okay. It's her! The bitch herself! I'm gonna take her apart joint by fucking joint!
Come on! Ah!
Saul pulled me under his arm and dragged me toward the door. The peculiar blurring of his wear camouflage beginning just at the corner of my vision. I felt sorry for the poor cardiac patients, fleetingly, and sorry for Father Rosas, though he probably hadn't heard a damn thing. She'd probably drugged him. Poison and chemicals are a sorrow's stock in trade, and Guillermo would mean less than nothing to her. Belisa's game right now was with me.
All in all, for facing down Belisa again, I handled it pretty well.
Jesus Christ! You were only in here for a minute. Can't I leave you alone for 10 seconds without gunfire? This is a hospital!
Do you really want me to answer that, Saul? It's her! The bitch! It's her!
To hell with dead whores. I'm going to hunt myself a sorrow. This is beginning to piss me off. I stared at the small brick building. The office on King Koa, Krakowitz's, was closed again. This time at 3 p.m. Doesn't this doctor ever open up?
You want to go in and take a look around?
I studied the front of the place, windowless because of the chance of projectiles. Family planning clinic in gold on the door that had a peephole, and an intercom box with the closed sign hanging from it as well as a UPS no stenciled underneath on white-painted bricks. There weren't any protesters out here, and I suppose that was a good thing. A doctor who did abortions needed to be circumspect and safety-conscious. If he didn't have a crowd of Jesus freaks out front, it meant that he hadn't pissed off the religious fanatics. Yet. I took my time, looking at the roof, the security cameras, the steel door. Ricky didn't say anything about needing an appointment.
Kind of odd for the doc not to be here.
He doesn't keep night hours either. I couldn't believe something so callous had come out of my mouth. To hell with dead whores, I'm going to hunt myself a sorrow. It was exactly the sort of thing a hellbreed would say, or a middle-way adept, one of those selfish bastards. I couldn't believe myself. Oh, Christ. If I'm going to do any breaking and entering, I want it to be for a good cause. We'll come back tomorrow. All the doc will be able to do anyway is confirm Baby Jewel wanted to get rid of a career impediment. Oh, Christ, Saul. I can't believe what I'm saying.
Relax, kitten. Just take a breath.
His hand closed over my nape, warm and hard. Saul reeled me in as he leaned back against the wall of the alley we'd chosen for surveillance. I closed my eyes and leaned against him, my head cradled below his collarbone and shoulder. My cheek rested against his t-shirt. His thumb worked along the tense muscles at the back of my neck.
She really got to you.
Mindfuck central. They probably have a dossier on me a mile thick.
What do you think the game is?
There's a vanishing possibility she actually knows something. The trouble is, there's nothing Chaldean that does this. The demons like to possess, not eat. And the Sorrows don't use body parts. They like the whole person, bleeding and screaming. After they've mind-fucked the hell out of them and torn them into little bits and slit their fucking throats and...
Jill.
What?
Shut up. I need you calm, baby. Nice and calm. You start going off the deep end and your pheromones get all whacked out. And that makes me real unhappy. Okay?
Okay.
Because I don't like no fucking Sorrow playing with your head. And we'll fix it just as soon as we can. But for right now, baby, honey, kitten, Jilly Kiss, you need to calm the fuck down. Before I give you a dose of calm, okay?
Okay, I'm calm.
No, you're not. But close enough.
I could still use a dose.
Bet you could. Me too. But business before pleasure, baby.
Who made up that rule?
You did.
Shit.
Want to break it?
We better get to Hutch's. I've got books to hit before I have to face a few hours with a hellbreed.
You want dinner?
No, I better not. Hanging around him tends to upset my stomach. Feel free, though. You can hit the stands for a burrito or something while I'm in Hutch's.
You think I'm going to leave you alone in the bookstore with Hutch? I know how hot he thinks you are.
Hutch's was a bust. Hutch hadn't had time to do more than pull the sources he thought were most likely and skim for translatable passages. We spent the better part of the day into the night poking through moldering books and not finding much that I didn't already know about the Sorrows. The term Chucharak didn't appear to mean anything at all, and Hutch hadn't managed to find anything on St. Anthony's spear, which meant that either he was slipping or Rourke had lied to me. Guess which one I'd lay money on. Our next stop was Mary of the Immaculate Conception, where I spent 20 minutes in a back pew with my eyes closed, smelling the peculiar odor of a church. Incense, vestments, ritual wine, the dash of hope, belief, terror, pleading. A familiar mix, comforting and spurring in equal measure. The beads of the Tiger Eye Rosary slipped through my fingers as I sat, swaying slightly. Thou who hast given me to fight evil, protect me. Keep me from harm. Grant me strength in battle, honor in living, and a quick, clean death when my time comes. Cover me with thy shield, and with my sword may thy righteousness be brought to earth to keep thy children safe. Let me be the defense of the weak and the protector of the innocent, the righter of wrongs and the giver of charity. In thy name and with thy blessing, I go forth to cleanse the night. It is the Hunter's Prayer. Faint comfort, maybe. That hunters all over the world had just said, or were about to say this prayer at any particular time. Faint comfort that I was a part of a chain stretching back to the very first hunters of recorded history, the sacred whores of Inanna, who used the most ancient of magics, that of the body itself, with the magic of steel, to drive the nightside out beyond the city walls. The priestesses were themselves heirs to the naked female shamans of Paleolithic times. Those who used menstrual blood, herbs, bronze, and the power of their belief to set the boundaries of their camps and settlements, codifying and solidifying the theories of attraction and repulsion forming the basis of all great hunter sorceries. They had been the first. Those women who traced lee lines in dew-soaked grasses, drawing on the power of the earth itself to push back hell's borders and make the world safe for regular people. Each woman in that chain had added something. Each man who had sacrificed his life to keep the innocent safe had added something, and all uttered some form of the prayer.
God help me, for I go forth into darkness to fight. Be my strength, for I am doing what I can.
When I was finished, I genuflected, candles shimmering on the altar. An old woman eyed me curiously as I dipped both hands in the holy water. She looked faintly shocked when I smoothed the water on my hair and the shoulders of my ragged coat, wiping two slashes of the cool, blessed water on my cheekbones like Saul's war paint. I genuflected to the altar one last time, before winking at the old woman and heading back to Saul in the foyer. He dangled the obsidian arrowhead on its braided leather, absently in his sensitive fingers, turning it over and over, smoothing the bits of hair and feathers. Saul pulled up into the fire zone of the Monde Nuit, reached over, took my hand, squeezed my fingers, hard, let go, a centimeter at a time. Another ritual. He would come into the Monde with me if he could. But a wear in a hellbreed bar like this would only spell trouble, and something told me Perry would love to have Saul on his territory. The scar on my wrist was hard, hot, and hurtful, a reminder that Perry expected me, a reminder I did most emphatically not need. The chill of a winter night folded around me as I walked to the door. There was a line, as usual. The bouncers eyed me. The same twin mountains of muscle, their eyes normal, except for red sparks glittering in their pupils. I stalked between the bouncers. They didn't make a single move. In fact, one of them grinned at me. I kept my chin up and a confident swing to my hips as I stalked for the bar. Riverson was on duty again, and his blind eyes widened. He immediately reached for the bottle of vodka. Not a good sign. I reached the bar, and he poured a shot for me.
You're supposed to go straight up. He's waiting for you.
Not like you to give free drinks, blind man. But I guess my tab's still good.
Riverson's mouth pulled down, sourly. His filmy eyes flicked past me, evaluated the dance floor. There was very little he didn't notice. It used to be that a visit to the Monde would be during daylight, to visit Riverson and hear what he had to say. Coming in as a hunter's apprentice and watching Mikhail's back.
Stop thinking about Mikhail, Jill. You have other things on your mind.
Of course, that was a losing battle. There wasn't a day passing by that I didn't think of him. After all, he'd rescued me, hadn't he? Better than any father figure I'd ever had. He had taken a shivering, skinny little girl in out of the cold. And he had trained me to be strong. Mikhail had pushed me, shaped me, molded me, and held the other end of my soul's silver cord as I descended into hell to finish my apprenticeship. Sometimes I wondered what he'd felt, watching my lifeless body on the altar, holding the silver cord steady, with the ruby I now wore, pulsing and bleeding in his palm, wondering if I was going to come back. Wondering if I would survive the trip down into the place Hellbreed call home. Or did he not wonder? Did he know he'd trained me as best he could and given me every weapon possible to use against the Nightside?
You should stay away from here, goddammit! You stink of where?
And you stink of hell, Riverson! Keep your fucking advice to yourself!
I turned and walked toward the back as if I owned the place. My tattered coat swung like the fringe on a biker's jacket. In the back, the tables were full of Hellbreed, playing cards, drinking quietly, Their glittering eyes followed me as I strode through, heading for the slender black iron door at the very back, behind its purple velvet rope. One of them half rose, reaching under his bottle green velvet coat. I barely blinked. My gun was instantly pointed at him.
Well, hello, whoever you are. What's your goddamn problem? You suddenly got tired of living?
My finger tightened on the trigger. I couldn't believe my luck. If he moved on me, I was well within my rights to shoot him and leave.
Oh.
Enough!
Harry's hand closed around my right wrist. The scar turned so hot under the leather, I almost expected to smell scorching. Harry's bland, interested face turned to the Hellbreed, who stood awkwardly, caught in the middle of pushing himself up to his feet and reaching under his jacket. Without warning, Harry's fingers on my wrist turned to iron. He subtracted the gun from my grip with a negligent twist of his free hand. He leveled the gun at the Hellbreed. The Hellbreed's head evaporated in a mist of black blood. The head is one of the surer places to kill a Hellbreed, and my ammo is coated with silver. True silver bullets are a bitch when it comes to ballistics. Luckily, you only need enough of the moon metal to pierce the Hellbreed's shell and render them vulnerable. It poisons them as well. Two for the price of one. Perry replaced the gun in my hand. Then he guided my hand down to holster it, his fingers still on the leather cuff over the scar. If Perry had wanted to make the point of just what I was here for, he could hardly have written it larger and underlined it with neon. I was here because I had business with him, and I was under his protection. Perry indicated the door and let go of my wrist. The door opened, a slice of blue light widening. I stepped behind the purple velvet rope, saw the stairs going up. My skin chilled all over.
Christ. I wish Saul was here. No, I don't. I'm glad he's nowhere near here. That means he's safe.
A little touchy, aren't we, my kismet? I wonder why.
Let the mind games begin. Lots of people trying to kill me lately.
Not in my house.
You can never tell when a hellspawn's going to get funny ideas.
No, you never can.
I kept my pace slow. This counted toward the 2 hours. Every moment I spent in the Monde counted toward the 2 hours.
God, get me through this.
I reached the top of the stairs, pushed the wooden door wide.